Welcome to the Notorious Scoundrels, a Star Wars Legion podcast bringing you the latest news, general perspective, and competitive discussion.
Hello and welcome back to the Notorious Scoundrels podcast. I'm Kyle. I'm here with Mike and Evan. What's up, gentlemen?
Hey.
Welcome back, Kyle. How was your break?
Thanks. It was great. You know, did the traveling, saw all the families, kids did all the things. So, spent a lot of time in a van with small children.
That sounds amazing. Sounds great.
You know, it was, my kids are pretty good travelers. But you know, it was probably close to 30 hours in total. So
of driving.
Yeah. Like not in one shot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's still a lot.
Yeah. But over the course of the break, it was probably pretty close to that.
I mean, it's like 10 hours there, 10 hours back. Roughly, right?
If you're not stopping a lot and driving fast, yes.
It's 10 hours in the car. Yeah.
And it's like 10 and a half of actual just straight drive time, but then you have to factor in stops, which when you have young kids is obviously more stops than you would have with adults. That's to Chicago. I also, you know, went to visit my wife's family, which is like 13 hours. So, and then between those two places, excuse me, was another drive. So yeah, you know, it is what it is. My kids are used to it. But
are we there yet?
Yeah, there was some of that. Like, they're a little better about that because I've learned that if I turn on the, even though I know where I'm going, I turn on the GPS, you know, the nice thing, like you can see the route and you can see the arrival time, so they can actually literally just see like how much time is left right there on the screen in the front of the car.
Man, they don't know how good they had it.
I know, right?
Now. I mean, like, I remember yeah. I remember the trips to grandma's house, which was, it was like from Baltimore to Silver Spring in Maryland. And I mean, it was only like 50 minutes, but it felt like an eternity.
Well, in fairness to you, it could have been anywhere from 50 minutes to 3.5 hours,
that's true,
depending on the day.
Yeah, back then, I'm not sure traffic was so bad.
Yeah, Mike, I remember, I think we were going up to PAX. And I was trying to like meet you guys up in that vicinity to caravan, and it took me like 3 hours to get from me to you, which is, you know, one side of the beltway to the other should take like 45 minutes, but it took three hours.
Oh man!
And then it took only like 2.5 hours to get to Philly, so more than half my drive was within the DC metro area, basically.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well. We got a lot of things to talk about today, but first, yeah, we got some blog updates. You want to hit us, Evan?
Yeah, really quick. We got, we're going to try to start covering what is going up on the blog each week, just that people can know what is happening. So the first thing that's up is that I have the Count Dooku unit guide updated for 2.6. I had some fun with that one. I wrote it like I was a semi-French Mater D. I had to Google a lot of French idioms, and hopefully I didn't mess any up. That one was fun to write. And then we have a Shatterpoint unit guide that will be up when you hear this from our Shatterpoint writer, Matt Zeus Juice Brownson. And then later this week, we're going to have a 2024 in review for Star Wars Unlimited and an Anakin unit guide also from myself. He is going to come up a little bit later in the podcast, but he was one to where a lot of these unit guides, I like update something that was written before, but guess what? With Anakin, I had to toss everything right out the window, except for the part about how many dice he throws. So stay tuned for all that. Also, do want to quickly mention that we have the random patron shout out. So this week it is Timoth Serberg. Timoth is such a cool guy that he doesn't even need the Y at the end of Timothy. He was like, you know what? I'm good. So he's just Timoth, and we really appreciate your patronage. And if people didn't hear last week, is that we redid all of our Patreon tiers. So there's going to be going for more audience participation. You'll see sort of like the full boat of what we have cooking in a couple weeks. But for now, we're at least shouting folks out. We're doing some stuff at the Discord. So please do take a look. And if you're interested, you can sign up for the Patreon. And that is the end of my shilling. Take it back away, Kyle.
All right. So this episode, we are going to talk about LVO here in a minute. But first, we did tease an announcement for this cast. So that announcement is this. I'm going to be gone for about 6 months. My job is requiring me to basically do travel where I won't have access to recording equipment and likely not any reliable internet or anything like that. So I'm going to be leaving the Scoundrels starting next week. Will be my last week. So and then after that, it's sort of unclear what my life situation is going to look like as far as my nerd free time is concerned, my nerd life work balance, if you will. It'll be kind of an indefinite sabbatical. I'm not certainly not foreclosing the possibility of coming back and doing content at some point. But I also don't want to make any promises in that regard because I just don't know. So, I'm not going to get super sentimental on this episode because it's not actually my last episode. That will be next week. But you know, I've been doing this for 6 years, with you guys, with a lot of great people, and it's been awesome. But yeah, life circumstances just mean that I can't do it for a while, and possibly indefinitely. We'll see. So I've got my retirement hat on. This is my I'm going golfing hat, except I'm not going golfing, but you get the idea. There are some things we would like you listeners to do in between now and next week, which will be my last episode. The first is to, if you can remember any like bad / amusing takes or just funny quotes that I've had, excuse me, over the years. Sorry. Then please go back and listen to those. And give Mike the episode number and timestamp.
Yeah, you can just post that in the comments of this YouTube video. Probably be the easiest way to do that.
Sorry, super funny.
We'll put this in there.
Yeah, please.
You're really getting ready for retirement, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could just make like a soundboard of me. You don't even really need me.
Kyle Goss.
All right. The other thing that I would like you to do is basically go through and just, if you have any questions for me, feel free to post those and I'll answer them next week.
This is your chance, people.
Yep.
Yeah. You've been boiling about something about Kyle. Like, I know Mike and I have like a list, but you might too. And so we want you to unload. I've also been listening to some old episodes. I've been trying hard on my way to and from work to sort of like gather some takes that in retrospect don't seem great, as if any of us have ever. Because like certainly Mike or I never had bad takes about anything. But Kyle, there's probably 6 years a long time. I'm sure there's something.
I mean, that's probably 600 or 700 hours of me talking that you can go back through.
I think we could do a whole podcast episode on that.
on what? On bad takes for me?
I'm not sure you know how many times you say that quote.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Noted.
Yeah.
See, just replace me with a soundboard. People wouldn't even know. Just hit the button at the right time.
Yeah.
So we're not expecting people, obviously, to go back and actually listen to 700 hours of Notorious Scoundrels, but...
Yes, we are. Stop it.
Yeah, maybe you aren't.
If you have, like, a specific memory of me, like, being like, man, when did Kyle say that? You know, that was ridiculous. Then go back to that episode and remind us. So... My wife.
Everybody over at England.
More water. She heard me coughing, hacking up upstairs. So.
Oh wow, that's really nice.
Yeah, it was very nice.
I was gonna say everybody over in England who has like long been sort of building the anger about the idea of Operative Vader being better than Commander Vader.
There you go.
In the early days of Blizzard Force. That's an easy one for y'all. That's just served up on a platter.
I have 100% repeatedly said, excuse me, that Operative Vader is better than Commander Vader. And I think that's still true. So you can quote this episode. Operative Vader is better than Commander Vader.
What a take. Mike, put that all over the YouTube.
See how many times I can find him saying it. And then
get a screenshot of Kyle making like sort of a dumb face, and then in like huge letters they'll say, is Operative Vader better than Commander Vader? And we'll get like 10,000 views just from that. So
just patch together me saying 10 different times that Operative Vader is better than Commander Vader. That is what it is. Obviously, if you have questions about that, you can also just ask me, but feel free to post some questions to our Discord in the intervening week between now and then. I'd get those in sooner rather than later, because there'll probably be a time lag in between when this releases and when we record this and when this releases and when we end up recording next week. So
you should get them into Discord and or the YouTube comments probably by the morning of the 20th.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Well, so we do have LVO this weekend, which I can't go to for reasons that we just discussed. And I was very sad about that, that I couldn't go. But lots of people are going. There's, upwards of 160-odd people participating between the GT and the Invitational. So...
Yeah, I think it might be maybe even a little bit more than that. I guess
170.
170-ish,
yeah. Which is great. I mean, LVO historically has been like a three-day tournament that attracts, usually fills up at 128 people. It's, other than Adepticon, has historically been like the largest tournament every year. So that's great to see that, they're still getting great attendance in between the Invitational and the GT. And my understanding is that you cannot play in both. So that is actually, 170 unique players and not like 60 players playing in two different tournaments plus 40 other players kind of a thing. So, so that's great. Well, we're going to talk about that. What do you guys think? You got any quick takes on what we expect to see at LVO? Obviously, it's two separate tournaments, and I think that's super relevant because they're two very different, really formatted tournaments as well. In terms of the stakes, I guess you could say, one being an invitational and one being just a standard GT. But
yeah,
no, I feel like I'm tainted since I've seen the data already.
That's fair. Yeah. So one caveat for this, we are going to discuss some data with like upgrade cards and units that are going to be taken and factions and such. The list deadline will have passed by the time this gets released. So, there's not going to be any shenanigans, or there shouldn't be any shenanigans as a result of that, because everybody should have submitted their list by the time you hear this. So I mean,
it's weird. I don't know. I think it will be interesting to see, I think, like, how well Sleepercell does. I think this is going to be, for me, this tournament is going to probably make or break Sleepercell as like whether it lives up to the hype. is Sleepercell a clone Commando? I suspect not, but I feel like we really haven't had a super major tournament for it to break out in yet.
I don't think that Sleepercell is going to be a like early Legion 2.6 clone Commando. It might be a like late Legion, like late Legacy Legion clone Commando, by which I mean, I think those were probably overpowered too, but it got sort of buried under EXD. And I think that if it wasn't for that sort of like shifting everything, is that they would have been like more obviously a like capital P problem in Legacy Legion. Whereas, Clone Commandos now, like, I think we'll talk about it, is that they're still plenty popular. But yeah, I think Sleepercell is overtuned. I think that like they're gonna get a they're likely going to get a points drop, in my opinion, in April. Just
increase.
You mean a points increase?
Which, right? Yeah, points increase. Yeah, that's sorry. That's
what God, don't make them cheap.
I think they should be at 55.
You know, let's just make the marksman free.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. There's not enough dice. Yes, so I think that they are going to get a points increase in April, and hopefully that's going to be paired along with a riot controlled points drop, which is probably what my brain was on just now. But yeah, we'll see. Like they've already taken one GT, Nick Bodnar's win, about a month ago, at PAX Unplugged. So they certainly have performed at the like typical America size GT level, which lately has been around 40-ish people, but this is it's bigger for both the tournaments, right? Is that like even the Invitational is bigger than what most of the GTs lately have been, and then the GT is a lot bigger than any American GT has been so far. There's been some European ones that have been around there, and a little bit more even, I think. But yeah, I agree, this will be a test. You may be surprised that the marksman seems to not have made the list of most popular upgrades. So at least we have that.
Dice. No one had any idea.
So, yeah, there's not going to be any 14 dice attacks. It will only be 12.
Yeah, I think this could be a situation kind of like, I don't want to compare them directly to EXD because I think EXD was definitely stronger in raw terms, but where you kind of had people were like, is the EXD good? I don't know. It seems like it could be good. And then they had sort of like a medium sized tournament that they won. And it was a little bit of a like, oh yeah, that they look like they could be good. And then Worlds was kind of like the coming out party for EXD.
Yeah.
I think this could be kind of similar with Sleeper Cell, where you had PAX, you know, where Nick took them to PAX and it's like, oh yeah, these guys definitely could be pretty good. And then LVO shows up and it's like, oh wow, Sleeper Cell is pretty good. You know, and it's kind of like the real breakout where it becomes obvious to even the casual observer that they're super good. I think it's possible that we could see that with LVO.
Do we want to talk about the faction breakdown?
Yeah, I think the faction breakdown is
I think it's pretty interesting. I think we should do one more caveat before we get to this, and it's that Aqua Droids and Crab Droids are not legal for LVO.
Yes.
Even though they're being released basically now, right? Like this Friday? Is that right?
I think one of these two tournaments is happening the day they come out, I believe.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're you know, literally just coming out, and I think there is actually like a sunset period that was mandated for LVO, so they're not going to be in any lists. That would obviously skew our predictions here, but this is going to be basically the PAX meta as far as the unit legality is concerned. So
it'll be for everything except for CIS for the reasons we just talked about, and then also Republic for reasons that we're going to talk about in a little bit, is that it will represent the totality of expansions that are going to be out for Shadow Collective and then the two other major factions, Rebels and Empire. So in terms of like talking about what the quote optimized unquote lists are, is that, you know, Rebels and Empire are not going to have anything new to play with going into Worlds. So it's sort of like it's a Worlds meta for them. But the shadow that Aqua Droids are casting with their 10-foot tall bodies looms very large, I think.
10? That seems short.
Yeah, I think it's more like 16. And it's a giant rectangular shaped body.
That's right. You can't see through those legs at all.
Nope. That shadow is 8 feet wide and 16 feet tall. All right. Yeah, let's hit us with some faction numbers.
Yeah. So this is like the most striking thing, is that in the GT, That's the bigger one, but it's the one that did not require an invite. And there have been plenty of podcasts that have gone over what that invite system is. So I think, like, at this point, we're right up on the tournament. But the GT, anybody can join. The Invitational was an Invitational. But the GT, it's basically a tie between Rebels and Empire in terms of the most taken faction. With Empire being one ahead at 30, Rebels at 29. And then there's a little step down to where it's Republic at 25 and then Sis at 24, and then there's Five Shot Collective. So I feel like the GT kind of lines up with sort of what is in my head as sort of like the typical faction popularity from like most of the eras of Legacy Legion, is that I feel like at really big tournaments is that you would see the separation like this, and then you would have usually Empire slightly on top of Rebels, and then Sis and Gar tie with each other and like a tiny bit of shot at Collective, much tinier bit than back when Pikes were, you know, 50 points or whatever stupid cost they were at the time.
Too cheap.
They were super cheap. So that's the GT, is sort of like a comfortable sort of traditional look at what the faction breakdowns are. And then when you get to the Invitational, things get a little bit crazy, is that the top faction is Republic at 21. And then the next one down is Rebels at 15, basically tied with CIS at 14. And then Empire is down at 10, and Shadow Collective with one brave Shadow Collector. I should say that it is possible that these could shift very slightly, because there's, like, you know, between 4 and 6 hours. I'm not sure what they did with the time zone part of this, but like left for list submissions, there could be some late minute wafflers, some real Kyle Dorn bosses, if you will. but I think we're seeing essentially what we're going to see. And so, yeah, like, what do you guys think of the breakdown and how different it is between those two tournaments?
I mean, the GT one says to me, the people that are playing in the GT are playing the lists that they have fun playing. And yeah, the Invitational one says to me that they are playing to win at all costs. Like, this is what I think can take a tournament. It is what I think those percentages say to me.
I think you're right, Mike, but I'm going to kick this right back to you, is that if you are going to pick the list that the Invitational players would gravitate towards in terms of, like, sort of trying to think, okay, like, these are all very good players who have proved themselves, and that they're sort of like, I think that there's like more metagame thinking going on probably in the Invitational set, is like, is Republic on top followed by Rebels and then the other two major ones at the bottom? Is that what you would have expected the result to be?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about it in several weeks at this point, or several episodes, but I actually don't think the clone nerfs were nearly enough to curtail the faction. And I think maybe perhaps more specifically, I don't think they hit Anakin with a big enough bat to change a lot of what what's going on. I mean, obviously, like, they hit the arcs, they hit the commandos. I think there are different ways to run arcs, which are almost just as good. I think commandos can be replaced with other things that we're going to talk about here in a minute. And I think you can preserve the efficiency of clone lists and perhaps even rev the clone efficiency up with Anakin at its head. More than it was before, because people are now not as short-sighted looking at commandos and stuff as they were before. That's where I'm at with that. I don't think the nerfs fixed the problem.
They just shifted it, basically.
Yeah. I think clones are still head and shoulders the kind of go-to strongest
in this environment, we should say, because with Aquas and Crabs not being out yet.
You know, I think those maybe have the potential to change that. I definitely think like the basis of clone lists are gonna change to like, you know, rather than taking a bunch of arcs, like, yeah, you're taking a bunch of clone Z6s and you're
Yeah.
probably hammering like Anakin and Bad Batch into the same list, because you can do that. It's really still fine. Yeah, I don't know. I will be interested to see where the Republic players landed. But I do think that they're at least on paper the strongest still.
I do think probably the indicator to me the most that this is the tale of two tournaments, and one of these is, you know, the quote unquote try hard tournament. I always hesitate to use that word because it has negative connotations to it, but and you know, the other is a more like typical show up and play GT is if you just look specifically at Empire. You know, Empire has always, even when Empire has been bad, Empire has been popular.
Yeah.
And when Empire has been good, Empire has been really
Very
popular.
popular. Yeah.
It's kind of always been like the default, all else being equal, most popular faction. So I think this is indicative to me of the fact that Empire is not great right now, because you have it as, you know, essentially tied for the most popular faction in the GT, and then by, you know, other than Shadow Collective, obviously, which is technically not a faction by quite a wide margin, the least popular faction in the Invitational. I think that says to me that, you know, the most competitive players just don't view Empire as something that they want to be taking to a tournament where they really care about the result. So,
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Empire is definitely, I feel confident in saying that Empire is the most owned faction for, I think, any of the factions. I will say it occurs to me that it's entirely possible that if everybody played this roughly the same list they probably qualified with, this is probably what the breakdown would look like.
That's certainly fair. It's like that may be a big part of it, is that probably a lot of the invitational players qualified with some pre-nerf Republic lists that were quite different compositionally, is my guess, than what they are now. But I can confirm, sort of just like talking about, because of the nature of Longshanks, is that we don't have like an exact breakdown of exactly which characters, and we don't know stuff about battle forces is another thing. So we don't know, you know, how many of those Republics are the strict 501s versus generics, probably mostly generics. But in terms of force users at the Invitational, is that Anakin is the top one. And as you might guess, based on the faction breakdown, is that Op Luke is the second most popular, but like Anakin's at 9 as of this time, and then Op Luke's at 5, which is basically tied with both Dooku and Maul in the Invitational. Whereas over in the GT, it's actually like a very even 5-way split between also Maul, although, yeah, I think we're talking about the CIS Maul, I should say. And then Commander Luke, Commander Vader, Anakin, Count Dooku is like, they're a little bit apart, but they're really basically all tied for first place. And so that's like much more of an even breakdown in terms of people taking Jedi, whereas over in the Invitational, it is an Anakin party and everybody else is just invited.
So I had a thought occurred to me as we were going over these force user numbers. And that thought is, do all of these units deserve to be grouped together in the way that they were 4 months ago? Or 6 months ago, or whenever the update dropped. The reason we used to group all these units together is because Force Push was stapled to all of them. And that is no longer true. Which I think is interesting. And in that all of these units are inherently very different once you take away that common denominator.
It seems like there's sort of two tiers, is that there's, you can almost like say I may even write an article about this. Seems like a good idea. Is that you could say that there's like knights and there's masters, right? Is that you have on one side you have your like your CIS Maul, your Commander Luke, and like they're basically there to be pretty efficient, just like melee threats, and that they have some command cards that can do some stuff too. But that's sort of a different category from basically like your Anakin. Each faction sort of has one that's probably like at the top of this level. Is that for Republic you have Anakin, for CIS you have Dooku, for Rebels you have Operative Luke, and then for Empire you have Commander Vader, and that those are the ones that you would actually put force push on and who are going to be costing 200 plus points. And like those are the ones to where truly the whole list is centered around them, whereas the other ones are basically like efficient melee operatives. And so yeah, like I do think that sort of talking about them in the same breath is a little weird, and maybe we should not be thinking about like CIS Maul as being all that different from General Grievous in terms of army construction.
Yeah, although, force push has kind of already been replaced by burst of speed as the thing that all force users take. And having played Grievous in 2.6, the fact that he doesn't have a force slot, even though force push is not nearly as popular, is still like super raw feeling in that he doesn't have burst of speed.
Fair.
And I mean, we could have a whole separate conversation about how
There it
interesting it
is.
is
There
that.
it is, right there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. Quote
Clip
that. Clip that. And put that on the soundboard. About burst of speed basically just replacing force push. And is this, to me, that's kind of indicative of the fact that there's really not that many force upgrades.
No.
Yeah, and I guess I agree with you. Burst of speed sort of has replaced force push, but inherently, I don't think burst of speed is a thing that really ties all of these units together, I guess is the thing. Like, yes, they've got four slots, obviously, but I don't know. I'm not sure burst of speed is unique enough to like be like, this is the category that ties everything together because they can go speed three one turn. And I'm just curious, like, is the reason that they're not being taken for force push, which means they're being taken because they're like efficient and killy, basically, at this point. So does this category, should it be force users, or should this be like, should they be, in with the arcs at 80 points, whatever you want to call like the most efficient units category, as opposed to this thing that we kind of have that's a holdover idea from the previous edition.
Not so much like Maul, but Commander Luke does have command cards that matter for the flow of the game.
Totally.
So, like in that sense, I feel like you have to think of him differently from just like a unit of ARC troopers. I was trying to think about like, do we think of him as being that different from so and so like efficient charging melee character that's not a Jedi? But honestly, like my mind was kind of coming up with a blank when I was trying to think of that, because like Grievous can do some stuff, but he has like he still retains some of the problems that he had in Legacy in terms of being suppressible and not being as fast as he could be. But yeah,
Wookiee
like
chieftain.
it's not.
There he is.
Hey, we talked about Wookiee chieftain at the last episode, or 2 episodes ago, when we were talking about improving those D tier units. So maybe someday we'll be talking about Wookiee Chieftain as being a more viable inclusion in lists than he is now. But yeah, there really aren't many. So like burst certainly does help in terms of getting in there, but a big part of me does just think that like these are efficient charging melee commander slash op like efficient charging melee characters, and that's really it, because I do feel like having a force push is still such a huge part of the identity of like what we really think of as a force user that I do think of the like the one of each faction that I mentioned a second ago as being a separate category.
I also do think it's kind of a unique combination. I mean, you've touched on all of these at this point, but command cards combined with the ability to move speed 3.
Yeah.
Combined with a high pierce value on your usually fairly reliable melee attack. You know, if you look at like pure efficiency melee units like arcs, they're much more points efficient than basically any character, to include even like a quote-unquote cheap force user like Luke.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think what sets those force users apart from the pure melee efficiency units are those three things, all in combination with each other in the same package, right? And so I think that they still belong in their same in the same category, even though it's not like, you know, in Legacy Legion, you would add objective play to that three-legged stool would be a four-legged stool, right? And you'd throw objective play in there. And I think that's still kind of true if you're taking force push on them. So maybe you add a fourth leg to the Dooku's and Operative Luke's of this list here. But I do think that even the, you know, Mauls and Commander Luke's distinguish themselves from regular vanilla melee units by just having those extra things kind of wrapped up in the same package.
So, bonus question.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we postured about Force Push was like that the reason that only like these four or five like force user units would get taken is because they're really the only ones that it makes sense to put Force Push on. And people just are like taking them but aren't taking Force Push. So my question then becomes, why are we not seeing the Ahsokas and the Asajjs and the Inquisitors and all of that if Burst of Speed is the Force upgrade that matters?
I mean, I think overall these units are just not well balanced against each other.
Yeah.
You know, you have some choices that are clearly better than others. And I think each faction, for the most part, has at least one. So, you know, if you're taking Ahsoka, that means you're not taking Commander Luke. Mm-hmm. And probably, I mean, I guess you could take both of them. But to me, I mean, what's the points difference between them now? Like, 15
yeah, so
points?
I was just looking that up. Is that so? Operative Luke is 165 and Ahsoka is 145. So if you're comparing Ahsoka to Operative Luke, then that's 20 points. And then there's another 25 points down between Ahsoka and Commander Luke. And so I think that that is a big part of why Commander Luke like definitely seems way, way, way more popular than Ahsoka. It's like obviously another big part is that he can share Courage 3 and that he has like a couple of potentially game defining command cards as well that benefit from being on Operative Luke, but don't need to be in order to perform their basic function. I'm really like, obviously Son of Skywalker can kill a bunch of people, but I'm really mostly actually thinking about Serve Your Master and I'm a Jedi, is that those command cards can turn a game around when you use them in the right place. And Ahsoka also, like, on top of being 25 points more for not a ton of extra offense, she doesn't have those command cards that can really like turn a game around the way that Luke's can. So to me, it's just like, if you're talking about the non-force push Jedi, is that, yeah, Commander Luke just seems like a much better deal than Ahsoka right now.
Yeah, and if you want like the high impact Jedi, you're just going to pay the extra 20 points.
Yeah, exactly.
Operative.
Totally. So I guess I find it really interesting that the reason that we're not taking them is because they're actually less efficient than the units that we were going to put Force Push on because they had Master of the Force. It's just like a weird same result, but a very different reason that we're not taking those units. As before.
Yeah, I think it's possible to kind of overthink that a little bit, but I think the answer is simply just that from a balance perspective, they're just not well balanced against their alternatives.
No.
We'll see what the April cards do for Ahsoka and the Inquisitors, because Yeah, right now seeing very little play.
Board-wide Inquisitor trainings for everybody.
Yeah, Inquisitor training is free.
An upgrade that goes down in value a lot when
nobody has Force Push.
Yeah, right.
Or
yeah.
Very few people have Force Push, yeah.
Yeah. They didn't need the Inquisitors to make Force Push not a thing, but the points did that, so.
I should also mention that those Force user numbers, like, they may, for, like, the final total, is that they may shift because, like, all we can get from Longshanks is, like, a combination of Force users and the upgrades that they're taking.
Sure.
No surprise that for Count Dooku, I talked about this in the article, is that you can just, like, I feel like you can just, like, sort of take Burst and Choke and Push and just kind of almost staple those to him. I know that there's some other folks who have taken Battle Med to do some, like, that way you can direct anywhere on the board, which is kind of cool. But I would really only ever take that if you're not taking Push. And then you can also put Saber Throw on him. Also, if you're not taking Push, if you just, like, can't afford it, to have a really, really, really sick one pip and then sort of regret it for the entire rest of the game. And then, yeah, for those Anakins is that, as we said, is that Burst of Speed is very popular, and it's just funny to, like, when we looked at the upgrade numbers, we're not going to get, like, super deep into those, but it's weird to see a list of upgrades that include Force upgrades and to see that Burst of Speed is more than twice as popular just for, like, for the entire tournament, and this is true for both of them, than Force Pushes. Like, imagine saying that a year ago.
Yeah,
it would sound crazy.
I do have a Force user question for you. Mm-hmm. Are these lists that you've given us inclusive of all Force users in the tournament, or are there Force users not?
So on there's going to be almost certainly Force users not on this list because the cutoff for, like, being able to see it
for the data that you have.
Yeah. For the data we have is that there is a cutoff of I think, like, you could only see people who took. You can only see the unit if three or more people took it.
Okay.
So, like, there could be some Brave Yoda players.
I was going to say, instance. I want to know how buried at the ground my little green man is.
We've said it before. He was close already, and so you didn't have to push him very far down. But I imagine that there will be a couple at the GT. Like, maybe two, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that there's going to be zero at the Invitational, and I welcome one of you brave souls to have proved me wrong by the time we do our next podcast.
Do we need to play some sad piano music for Mr. Yoda at some point?
The sad piano music is actually today is going to be for some other characters, but
yeah, I know we're doing an actual segment on that, but
I don't know. I don't want to play music for him until we get to April and then see if maybe AMG's heart grew three sizes that day and decided to, like, overrule the relentless steady charge change, or just, like, cut him, just sort of go, like, you know what, we cut him by 10 points, but that was actually a clerical error. We meant to cut him by 40. And then, you know, then at that point, I'll be ready to either say, like, okay, he's alive, or we can start playing the piano music then. But maybe it's just that I'm holding on too hard.
Yeah, we're not the rebellion, man.
Yeah, we don't have to keep saying Jin is good. It's okay.
Yeah, you know, we're not holding on.
Finally,
yeah, I guess we'll see. But I'm not. I do think the charge relentless steady change is. It's been like a month or so at this point, right? Maybe two.
2 months. Yeah.
It is notable how I'm not sure I've talked to anybody that's been like, this change was a good one.
Yeah. I've seen like a couple comments online that were talking about how the situation, like, some people have sort of stated their opinion that they thought that the situation before was an unintended consequence of, like, rules interactions, but to me at least, is like when I looked at Yoda's command cards from the second that they were revealed on a spoiler stream however many years ago, is I was like, oh, part of the deal here is he really is pretty close to Wookiees. Part of the deal here is that it's true that guidance doesn't have the inherent like super good thing that pull the strings does, where you can do an attack with it, but it puts you in situations to where you functionally can do an attack with it, both because of Yoda's 2-pip and the fact that he was released alongside Wookiees that famously, you know, have charge. So like, to me, it was always a core part of his design from the top down. And so the fact that changed, it affects all of his commands also, right? Because there would be some situations to where I remember losing to our own Matt Bronson, or no, I'm sorry, it was to JJ's Juggernaut. I've lost plenty to both of them, so sometimes I'll like mix them up in my head. Sorry about that. But I lost to JJ's Juggernaut playing a Yoda and Anakin list. And so on Yoda's 1-pip, he could just guidance Anakin to do like relentless charges into my units twice in one turn. And it was pretty sick. And I was like left like dazed and drooling in the corner after losing to that. By the way, he also had 2 lats. If anybody is keeping track of what an insane list this was.
This was back when we only had 800 points.
Yep.
I mean, that's what, like 600 of your 800 points, basically?
Yeah, so yeah. Aside from that, he had 3 naked clones in R2, and that was his list. And so, you know, obviously, like, that's an edge case, but there were plenty of situations to where guidancing twice would have been good for all sorts of other objective things, which is also now irrelevant in the current environment. So just the idea that you put all the changes together and that Yoda is down, I guess, like a total of 30 points since pre-2.6, because he got the same sort of 20 points cut as everybody else initially, and then he got 10 more when they changed Relentless. And yeah, it just makes me sad, and I feel like we're maybe seeing the evidence that a lot of the player base is just as sad about what's happened to our poor little green man. I feel like we keep lamenting Yoda on these podcasts, and people are probably getting sick.
Can we shed a tear for Palpatine too? I mean, that was a big part of it. I know that you can attack with pull the strings, but doing it off the move was a big part of his kit too. Because
it absolutely was.
For sure.
IRG and Vader in particular. I mean, IRG, like, they're literally meant to be run with Palpatine at the same time. And from the moment he released, and he was released, you know, what, like 2 years before Yoda? That was like a core Palpatine strategy, was to move the IRG and then attack with them.
Yeah.
They were part of the Palpatine package. So, you know, saying that this was like unintended, that you'd be able to move and then attack off of somebody else giving you a move, is definitely not historically the case. Maybe now you could say it's the case, but it definitely was not the case when those units were released. So, yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. They don't typically just like straight up reverse things back to how they were, even if the changes are unpopular. So I'd be kind of surprised if they did that with this one, but maybe he'll get more points cut off or something. I don't know. I struggle to see something happening to Yoda in a way that makes him both good and also interesting and different.
Yeah.
At some point, if you make him so cheap, he's just like another saber user guy that can whack people twice in one turn instead of once, and that's like what makes it
this
is the other ones.
Sort of what I was trying to drive home earlier was like I feel like all of the like force users are kind of like, all the good force users are kind of this amorphous blob of things that can hit stuff really good twice to some extent. I don't know. Anywho, no Yoda, cue the music.
Yep.
Do we want to like each maybe sort of just like make a gut prediction of like maybe let's try and I want to predict the GT to for some reason that seems like, because the faction balance is like a little bit more interesting, is that that seems like a maybe a slightly more fun thing to try to predict, because for Invitational is that you can probably like put some money down on, I think an Anakin Republic list is going to win, and feel probably pretty good about it. Just obviously anything could win, but from a math perspective, that is seeming pretty strong because of how many people are taking him.
Whatever Austin Miller is running, that's what I'm predicting for the.
That is always a good prediction.
Yeah, that seems good. Predict what you think will win the GT.
I think Dooku's going to win the GT. I think Dooku's on a little bit of a tear at the moment.
He's good stuff. Dooku's good.
I did see that there were a whole bunch of ATSTs at this thing. So I'm going to like be a little bit mathy and say I think maybe Tempest Force will take it, because it's like that's a list that's just like consistently been good. And then if you know what you're doing, then like there are some lists that can do very, very little against it. And so if it hits the right matchups, then like it has the potential to just cruise. Yeah. If it's hitting the right matchups. So I'm just gonna sort of guess numbers based and say Tempest.
I hope not, Evan. I really hope not. I hate that list so much.
It's
not a thrilling list, don't get me wrong, but at least in my opinion, I'm not trying to like harsh on the people that choose to play it, but to me, yeah, just like three ATSTs and a bunch of scouts, it just feels a little bit vanilla to me, but it's good, it performs on the table. And for people that like wake up to play vehicles in Legion, is that like they get a lot out of it, and like that is really cool, and I'm glad that it exists. It's just not my thing personally.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm gonna go with what probably would have been maybe a bit of a hot prediction a few months ago, and I think has quickly become a lame prediction, and I'm gonna say that it's gonna be a Rebel smorgasbord list with three sleeper cells in it. So maybe some ATRT lasers. I don't know. We'll see.
That may be the actual chalk pick, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with. Rebel good stuff with the three sleeper cells. So
I'll briefly say that from a vehicles perspective is that for both tournaments, it's super clear that like by far the most popular vehicle right now is the Rebel laser ATRT. And then after that, you have Deccas, which is half of the ATRT number, by the way.
That's quite a drop off.
Yeah. And then after that, it starts to like get a little bit more variable between the two tournaments. But that was like, despite the faction differences, is that obviously with Republic, it's usually not a super vehicle heavy faction. So you can sort of like take that, sort of negates the fact that there's way more Republic proportionally in the Invitational. And so, yeah, when you take all that away, you're like, okay, what are the efficient vehicles? And it is funny that it's like, it's the two cheap core set vehicles that are like good and played out there. Like the two walkers from the core set, both of which, I guess I wasn't really around when the ATRT came out, like certainly when the Deccas came out, is that there was the thought of like, these can be good, but 100 points, which is again what they did actually cost back then, is that it seemed like it was too much.
It was definitely too much.
Yeah. I mean, like what sort of splash did, obviously like when the first corset came out, they were the only vehicle that Rebels could possibly take. But like when they had some other options like Tauntauns, did you ever see ATRTs on the table after that?
Not after.
No, yeah. No.
I mean, there was definitely like a,
there was a time period when they were window. Like a meta pick.
Yeah. But that was really due to like, you were taking like Luke, Leia, some Rebel troopers, and then you had like commandos, ATRTs, and like Wookiees to pick from.
Right.
Basically, you know.
I think even maybe by the time commandos came out, that was the actual release, and not Tauntauns, that kind of just pushed ATRTs to the side, because it was like, oh, look, I can take something else. I mean, they were fine when they came out, and it was one of those things where when you're the other choices were like other ATRTs, and then ATSTs were also super popular because that was and snow speeders, because those were your options. You know, then laser ATRTs, it was like, all right, pretty strong chance that I'm going to run up against the vehicle, and also I can't really take anything else. So it was, you know, when the game first came out, it was not like, do I take ATRTs? It was like, which gun do I take on the ATRTs? So.
And I feel like people flexed off them pretty quick because they were in an environment where like airspeeders and ATSTs both launched basically with the game, and both of them just vaporized ATRTs for breakfast.
They did.
So I don't know, like it was a vehicle that could like die in like one to two shots from an ATST or an airspeeder, which was kind of a problem.
Yeah, although purely from a points perspective, they were actually pretty good into airspeeders because the airspeeder was also ridiculously expensive.
That's very fair.
And you could almost buy like three ATRTs for the price of one airspeeder. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they've always been fragile. So that is what it is. But yeah, they had a time, and perhaps their time is back again.
It certainly seems like their time is back.
Oh,
I
very
was
good now.
I didn't believe my own memory when I was thinking, was the original ATRT like on printed on the card, was the original cost really 35 points for the laser cannon?
Yes.
Like for the hard point.
Yep.
Man, that is just nuts.
It was a lot.
There was a lot of learning that went on with the development of this game, you
Yeah.
That's fair.
know? I mean, in fairness, range was definitely king in Old Legion, so.
Yeah. Range four, the fact that you could take just, even though it was like a bad range four gun, it was still a range four gun, you know, and suppression too. I mean, suppression was king when everything was courage one.
And your units didn't die. Like
Right, yeah.
whenever you got shot, you like maybe lost a model.
Right. If you ever killed like three models in a unit, that was like a game-changing moment, you know. Yeah. And it wasn't because like defense was super high, it was just because dice pools were like V6 was considered like the height of offensive efficiency. The Rebels E6, by the way. So
That was the best attack pool in like the game,
Yep.
man. Unless you could like deliver Luke on target or something.
Right.
It seems wild how powerful cover was in comparison to the guns that existed when the game
Yes.
was very young.
If you could like reliably get the angles to get out of cover shots, you were like, you know, printing hits basically compared to your opponent. You know, I mean, that was one of the best things about the early game, in my opinion, was that the cover dance was so important.
Yeah, it was huge.
And if you were Empire, it was a lot easier to do that dance than if you were trying to dance with an ATRT versus dancing with speeder bikes, right? At least it seems that way to me.
Yeah. I mean, speeder bikes definitely had that moment in the sun, but I think kind of similar to ATRTs, once scouts became a thing, speeder bikes ceased to become a thing. I mean, speeder bikes were what, like 90 points when they came out?
They were very expensive, yeah.
So, I mean, you'd think so, but you know, ultimately it was still like you could still get out of cover shots with trooper units if you knew what you were doing, and trooper units were generally more efficient. So, yeah.
Basically,
I
everything
don't
just
know.
got replaced by strike teams.
Yeah, I mean, for another, while we're reminiscing here, we didn't build this as a segment, but I mean, snipers used to be unlimited range. That was a thing. Range five was not part of the game. I forget which year the balance update was, but they introduced range five as a thing, and then they changed all the sniper weapons to range five instead of unlimited. So.
I want to say that it was around the time that like ARCs
It was.
and BXs came out, because I'm pretty sure that
They were printed with Range 5
they were
originally.
printed with range 5, but they were printed with range 5 specifically because like that was when they were changing all the other snipers to range
Yes.
5.
Yep.
I'll say I started the game with the Clone Wars core set, and there were no infinite range snipers when I started the game. So I think it was probably a little bit before that, because like when I heard, I was being so annoyed by the fact that this unit that I wasn't allowed to have quote unquote allowed to have as a Republic player that could shoot me from way far away. And I was like, oh man, Rage 5 is so far. And then, you know, the veterans were telling me, oh, well, they used to be infinite ranged. I was like, that sounds terrible.
It was. It did not last that long.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was literally like the first balance update after snipers were released. They were changed to range 5. So
yeah.
Yeah, one of the better changes in the history of the game for balance purposes. Yeah, it was within the same year as the Arcs and Commandos released, but it was definitely like before the actual core set release, I think.
Right.
Yeah. All right. While we're reminiscing, should we move on to the In Memoriam segment?
Well, yeah, it depends on, it depends. Like, do we want to have like some, do we want to start with dessert or start with assault? In terms of, cause like there is an announcement. There is a pre-order, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we start with that, and then we can shift on to the sadder stuff, and and then we can like end the episode by reminiscing about products gone past.
Okay, that sounds
and
fair.
And sort of try to sweeten up a little bit at the end, but yeah, we got two announcements today, right? Or not announcements, but two pre-order pages on Asmodee.
Yeah, the ARF Troopers and the Terrain Pack, which is officially called the Outer Rim Battles Terrain Pack. Yeah, and I mean, we didn't get like full previews of ARF Troopers or anything, but there were some nuggets to be learned from the box. There's 8 models in here, one of which appears to be like a generic Jedi, which I assume is a squad leader upgrade. And then... you know, 7 ARF Trooper models, all of which have DC-15s.
And 6 of which have DC-15s.
6, yeah. One RPS.
Yeah, one guy has an RPS, yep.
Yeah.
And then there's 4, it says there's 4 cards in the box. So I assume that's like a unit card and then potentially, yeah, I guess, up to 3 upgrade cards. You know, maybe an extra guy, the Jedi and the RPS, I don't know.
It's either that, well, because like the other interesting thing to me was that, so if there's 1 Jedi and 7 troopers, and so if one of those troopers is an extra guy and the other one's the heavy, then assuming they didn't like give you an extra trooper for no reason, or because they could just like fit one on the sprue, I don't know how often they actually do something like that. But if we assume that that's not the case, then you would be talking about a 5 mini unit, because then if you have the extra guy and the heavy, that makes 7. The alternative is that the base unit is 6, which we have some precedent for special forces releasing with 6 minis, right? It's the sleeper cell did. And that the other possibility would be that they either have some kind of a commando-ish style upgrade, that is sort of like built in to their chassis, or what I'm kind of hoping for, honestly, is that there's 2 different options for the Jedi upgrade, because the thing that I've been thinking ever since they like talked about the fact that the Jedi upgrade could go into either ARF ARF troopers or ARC ARC troopers. You can tell I'm in healthcare because I just sounded that out just now. But like, I couldn't think of many upgrades where I would definitely want those on, where I would definitely want this upgrade on both a range 4 shooty unit and a charging in range 2/ melee unit, because either you're giving up some sick melee, either you're paying a lot for a sick melee weapon that you're not going to use that much, or alternatively, you could be paying a lot for some kind of a defensive upgrade that admittedly the ARCs could probably use too. But again, if it's like a melee focused in your upgrade and you're paying a lot for it, then I don't really see why ARFs would take it. So I've kind of been hoping that there might be a chargey version and a deflecty version of the Jedi, and you can flex it to whichever unit you want. So I guess we'll see in a couple weeks, because Usually the preview articles come out like a week and a half after the pre-orders go up, so we should know pretty soon. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think if it's a chargy upgrade and a like defensive range reflexive upgrade, I think it should be a flip card, frankly. I think the six man squad, I think, is more likely. I think the likelihood that there's a personnel upgrade in this pack is like,
they like even numbers for some reason.
Yeah, I think the likelihood is pretty low that there's a personnel upgrade in a special forces squad. So I definitely think it's going to be base six. And I think AMG just really likes Gar, so I think Gar gets all the shiny new cool stuff, so they're definitely getting a Katarn like upgrade for sure. I mean, look at this, they're getting a generic Jedi in their pack that you can equip to like who knows what, and like I don't know, Gar just gets all the cool stuff.
Just to remind everybody that Mike is a, you know, primarily ish a Gar player, and so he's not going into the salt zone when he's saying that. I agree with him that it does seem like there's an affinity.
I mean, I'm gonna be honest, if I played a different faction, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, you'll have to hear about that in some other podcast, because you know, none of us are upset about it.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, how come Gar's the only one that gets squad leader upgrades?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it seems like Gar just gets all the cool stuff.
Well, the upgrade is shaped like a clone trooper helmet, so next question, please.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what these guys do. I'll be curious to see how they balance. I mean, not like, you know, we have things like range troopers and commandos, but this entire unit has a gun that is in the game traditionally been range four. So
yeah.
Yo, you ready for the 12
traditionally
red
been a red
six
dice range four. Right. Obviously not like double, you know, double red dice for like the generic troopers in the unit, but
don't assume anything, Evan. I mean,
Okay, sorry. obviously this group of like rebel sneaky guys wouldn't be shooting 12 surging black dice with tactical at range two, right? Whoops. I guess I am curious what do you guys think is going to be the basic weapon that these guys have? Like, I think we all agree range four, but
I mean, I think it's got to be a black die.
It has to be
four.
A black
die.
It can't be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a white is probably just not good enough. I don't know.
I was thinking that a black die wouldn't be good enough to justify them. Like, originally, I was thinking if it's just one black dice, and I'm assuming that they don't naturally surge, and they probably don't have reliable either, which means that they would be relying on other people's surges or aggressive tactics or whatever to convert. Is that, because there's a big part of me about, like, if that was the case for what I was imagining was going to be a four mini unit, is like, it didn't seem like there would be a super great argument to take that above just clone infantry.
Yeah.
Who take their surge tokens with them and also shoot black dice at one lower range. But if it is a six-man unit, then at that point, non-surging or non-natively surging black dice without reliable at range four, it seems like more of an equation that you'd have to run in terms of what's more efficient. So yeah, probably one black dice is what makes the most sense.
Yeah, I mean, if it is any better than that, I think we're going to have a problem. I think a black die at range four might be too good anyhow, but I don't think it can be white. I don't think.
Do you think double white die is possible?
I do think double white is possible. A single white is, I think, out of the question. But, I mean, like, I'm just like, base unit. What's that?
Sorry. It's out of the question for the factions that the game company likes is what he meant to say, Kyle.
Yeah, I was making a Pathfinder sound and cough. Any resemblance to the actual word Pathfinders was purely coincidental.
That's fair.
But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that these guys look like they're probably gonna have red saves. I guess it's certainly possible gameplay wise that they could have white saves, but I think it's highly unlikely. Which I just like, if these guys throw a black die each at range six, the base squad's gonna have to be like
80 to 90
80
points.
points
Yeah.
before upgrades, like minimum.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be range troopers that can token share and have more models in the base unit, basically.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is this is gonna be a hard one not to screw up.
Yeah, I mean, if range troopers, I think, are probably their most comparable unit in terms of what their role appears to be. And range troopers' one glaring weakness is their lack of access to surge tokens, which Empire has trouble generating for them. One thing Republic does not have trouble with is generating surge tokens for units to use. So, if these are basically like Republic range troopers and they're costed similarly, then they're going to be ridiculously good.
And presumably you can put a clone commander in these guys if they
Right.
have a squad leader upgrade. And that's assuming that the Jedi doesn't have reliable, which I think is entirely possible.
The well, the clone commander right now, doesn't it say infantry or arc only?
That's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to
I'll look
that.
it up while we're talking. But the other thing that is worth mentioning, just like from the pre-order page, is that it sort of talks about narratively like what the unit does a little bit, and it does mention that it has some kind of keyword that is relevant to deployment and some kind of keyword that's relevant to cover. The latter one, on that, it could be either sharpshooter or maybe low profile or something. But I think it's going to be a question of, will they have Scout 3, or will they have infiltrate,
What about super infiltrate? What
or will it,
about
yeah, infiltrate plus three aims,
yeah.
and the it'll cut the upgrade, or the keyword will just be called Rekstar, and it will be there to just give everybody nightmares.
Joke's on us. You can actually put Rex in the squad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
For a
there you go.
discount, discounted Rex.
Yep.
Yeah.
15 points.
Yeah.
The clone commander, it just says clone trooper only,
That's what I
so
thought,
it could go in there. Yeah, you're right.
There you go. All right. Should we talk about this terrain pack real quick? Because I think this is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
In particular, it appears that I mean, I think they've basically told us that the walls in this pack are taller than a trooper silhouette, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are.
If that's the case, I mean, there's like nine walls in this pack, plus this corner thing, plus some area terrain and some other random little visual tidbits.
Yeah.
$60 is pretty good value for this box.
I was really
I was taken
surprised at the
aback by how
price
cheap it
point.
was. I think a lot of us, especially those of us who played MCP or Shatterpoint and know like how expensive those terrain, about how like sometimes terrain has been used in some people's opinions to like inflate the
Yeah.
cost of various character
I mean,
boxes.
look at the like Imperial Bunker and the escape pod and
Yeah,
the
yeah.
laundry list of really, frankly, minimally functional terrain pieces that are also ridiculously overpriced.
60 is a good deal from the looks of it, for sure.
I like this a lot. I'm hoping that people incorporate this into their existing terrain sets rather than just buying like three of these and making a map with a bunch of line of sight blocking walls on it and nothing else. But
This is definitely the most effective terrain pack that has been released for Legion officially.
yes,
And not
totally agree.
particularly close.
Yeah, and I think that's what they were going for based on how they talked about it. So it's designed to be modular. Like these walls, you can kind of stick together and or leave them separate, and it's this is the first one, it seems like, where the primary focus of the pack has been functionality.
I hope they make more of these at the same price point, or roughly to
Yeah.
it, because I think this will actually sell and you won't have to give away your Hydra tanks and
Yeah.
Adepticon. You won't have like large swaths of shelf space at a store that are taken up by Imperial bunkers and crashed AT-STs, which was it was like a sad reminder of of just like, well, we devoted a lot of space for Legion. And, you know, some stores like probably eventually got out of selling Legion and they were like, well, it just stayed there on the shelf. It was like, well, if the shelf was half full of crashed AT-STs and Imperial bunkers, then I can tell you why it stayed there.
Yep.
Yeah. They were neither effective terrain pieces or cheap terrain pieces.
Yeah. The double whammy.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we move
on?
Yeah,
it's time to get add a little bit of melancholy to the conversation, I'm sorry to say. And actually I need to appropriately I'm just going to be listening to the music that you're going to hear so that I can really get into the groove. So all right. Let's take a deep breath. Last week, if you didn't hear, we started this new segment that I'm calling Minis in Memoriam. If you're curious, I can talk about my alternate names for this, which are much worse than that, I think. But basically, we're talking about how...
I'm curious.
Okay, how about Sepulcher for SKUs? Sepulcher is a little bit of an esoteric word. I had to thesaurus that one. But
I get like a necromancer vibe.
Yeah.
That one just reminds me of Warcraft. And that's
yeah.
Yeah, you have to pour 30 souls into the Sepulcher for SKUs before you can summon the skeletons. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what this is that we're covering the product packs, the SKUs, if you will, that have officially been sold out at the Asmodee store, which means that eventually all the other stores that sell Legion are going to be selling out of this too. But the Asmodee store is always the first step. We have a gentleman, Rowdy Octopus, who is keeping track of this live so that we can do this stupid segment over and over again when it keeps happening. But anyway, that's what's going on. I did want to cover a couple of quick ones that I had missed last time from late December. So if you will, again, we'll take a deep breath and remember the fallen. Starting off with Rebel Commandos, more like Command Don't. They're gone. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That was terrible.
That was real bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not actually that sorry. It's Leia and Luke, brother and sister. That would be Operative Luke, since the original one came in something else that we may be talking about soon. But those two have also finally both sold out. I was thinking about how they died in the movies, and they both sort of like used too much force when they were trying to talk to Kylo Ren. So not a very functional family right there.
Hashtag first order confirmed.
Yeah, obviously. And then, so those are the catch-ups. That we have a couple new ones, one of which is quite a big one. The smaller one is Mr. Director Krennic, have you guys ever noticed like the shot in Rogue One right before he dies about how this is like one of the coolest things that you can see the reflection of the Death Star charging up the laser like in his eyeball, is that they CGI that in there, which is pretty sick.
I did not notice that.
So like the next time you ever see that scene, is that like take a look at that, because I think I saw it the first time I like watched it at home, and I like paused it and rewound it, and was like, no way, that is awesome. Anyway, Director Krennic, he is down, which is, I'm sure that like he'll be easy to find, hopefully, until they come out with that that multi-commander pack for Empire. But
I hope so. Now, he's like pretty critical.
He's very good.
Yeah.
Right. But the last one, it's a big one. So take a deep breath, prepare yourselves. The Star Wars Legion core set, the original core set with those little baggies full of soft plastic with the speeder bikes and the AT-RTs that had a printed cost of the laser of 35 points. That is now sold out at the Asmodee store, which also means that that is the last sort of like big pack. The Battle Forces packs went quicker, and then the Clone Wars pack kind of came after that. But now there's like there's no starter sets for Legion on Asmodee, which is kind of wild. You can still see them on Amazon for now, but it kind of made me wonder. It's like the clock is ticking a little bit. Like, at what point is finding a original Legion core set going to be like pretty tough? Maybe, and is that going to happen before whatever the new core sets are going to come out? Because that seems like it would be kind of a crisis.
Well, I mean, it's going to be longer than 2 months. We just got the pre-orders for March 15th.
Yeah.
Or 14th or whatever it was. So, which we probably won't get another pre-order until April. So, April at the earliest.
It seems like once a quarter, roughly.
Yeah.
Is the schedule now. So, yeah. April-ish.
So, I don't know. Hope it's within the next 6 months. If not, that could be a problem.
I feel like there were so many core sets that were sent out to like various stores. There's probably a bunch of like random toy stores that aren't really hobby stores that have a Legion core set lying around that through the magic of capitalism would eventually find their way into secondary distributors. So I don't know. I don't know how bad it's really gonna get. I know Battle Force boxes are pretty hard to find. Not totally impossible. I'm hoping that they can at least hold out, because it is definitely concerning if we get to a point where a new player is like, how do I get into the game that a bunch of people are playing right now? And the answer is wait 3 months. That would be tough.
At least 3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be difficult. Yeah. I mean, what's the Essentials Pack situation? Is that one also MIA? Because, I mean, in theory, if the Essentials Pack is still available, you could at least get, like, the tools and stuff, and then just buy all your units individually the non-cost-effective way, I guess.
I mean, but I think one of the bigger issues there, though, is that, like, core sets being out of stock, basically, and Battle Forces being out of stock means that, like, Separatists basically can't get B1s, and B2s are also out of stock. So I guess that means you're playing June Notions.
The Essentials kit has been out of stock at Asmodee anyway since July 30th.
It's been almost 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
I walked into that one, I guess. Yeah. Did you guys do an in memoriam for the Essentials kit?
No, but here we are.
No, like it would, like, you know, we could do a retrospective in memoriam, but that would be. Just like you would say, Kyle, you could do a whole podcast about that. In fact, it would actually probably be like 3 podcasts, because I think what did I say earlier is that out of 118 or 117 like SKUs of the original Star Wars Legion.
SKUs, yeah.
Yeah. Is that I think there's 46 of them are still active on the Asmodee store. And again, that doesn't mean the rest are impossible to find, but like the Asmodee totally running out is the first step on the chain reaction that leads to where we have been for a fair while with things like Commandos and Saber Tanks and B2s. And so, you know, like for most of the stuff, you can still find it out there, but it seems like it's going to come down to the wire.
So I have a hot take. Let me know
how you
guys.
That's why we're here, Mike.
I know. That's certainly why I'm here. I don't know about you guys. I think the new core sets are going to have different heroes in them. And I think that is, like, Luke is in the character pack. Vader, yeah. I believe, is also in his own separate character pack. I think we're either going to get entirely new characters or, like, it's going to be a different character than what was in there before.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I will say that if, speaking personally as a like primary Republic player, is that if AMG came out and said, you're going to have to wait a few months for this new core set, but we got Mace Windu.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'd be like, yeah.
waving my $100 bills. It's like, how many of these do you need? That would change a lot. I'm not sure if the other factions like have a Mace Windu, so to speak, to where they would be like, oh my god, I need it right now.
I think you could come up with one for every faction. What about Saw Gerrera for Rebels?
I was gonna say Saw for Rebels would be pretty, or
like, you know, for like actual characters from Rebels who aren't named Sabine, right? Like, you know, yeah. They could do all sorts of Kanan or Ezra. Right.
Yeah. Or what's the guy's name from Andor? The guy that like is in charge of all the cells.
Yeah, the awesome guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome speech guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm blanking on it.
I think that
would be another one. Yeah.
Like if you want to buy a Corset,
Luthen Rail.
If you want to build a Corset that everyone is going to buy, you want to put something new in it, right? I mean, that's what GW does.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So I'm starting to suspect that we're going to get new characters in these Corsets. I think for Rebels, Cal Kestis also could be a pretty big win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
what would you do for Empire and Sith?
Grand Inquisitor.
Who is markedly missing
presently.
Yeah.
And then for Sis, for a long time, the character that's been most markedly missing to me has been Jango Fett, but that's not really like a commander you can build around, right?
Yeah, you could still put him in a Corset, though.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like, your Corset could be a Super Tech and Jango Fett, and people would buy that up.
Newt Gunray and Jango Fett.
Newt, there you go.
Newt.
Yeah, and that way you can put Droidekas in it and actually have command cards that like do things with them, right? I don't know. I think there's a lot of... I do expect there to be like a pretty character-heavy focus in the Corsets. It's very possible there could be more than one character for each side. I think that would be really cool. But
AMG is a very character-focused company. You see that when they got their crack at making a Star Wars game is that they made Shatterpoint, which is all about the characters. It's true that there are generics in that game and that they certainly fulfill a function, but it really is all about those primaries and secondaries. And then they did expand the points to 1,000, which certainly makes more room for characters, as we've seen with every single Rebel list that's existed since 2.6 came out. And they've also hinted at what we basically all sort of agree is probably what they mean by this, is that they've hinted at the fact that the nature of commanders versus operatives in terms of list construction is going to change. And I think most people who heard that have been thinking that they're going to make the Shadow Collective rules for everybody, right? To where it'll be that you can have four of them and you need to have at least one commander. But if you want to do four commanders or one commander and three operatives, that they would let you do that. And that seems like it would align with what AMG likes to do.
I certainly can't wait to take four clone commanders in the same list.
Man, me too. They're going to be directing all over the place, and it's going to make me like, now I can fire support. Oh, no.
No, I can trigger defend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Defend is pretty rad.
Or the new fire support, which gives you a standby token, right?
It's too expensive.
That's a 30-point mini, Kyle.
I'm just saying, it'd still be a free standby token. Although I guess now you couldn't use it to attack.
You couldn't use it for relentless.
Yeah.
Right. But it's still a big restriction that you can only shoot the triggering unit.
Correct. Yeah. Which is not as good as they used to be.
Not like the good old days of sharing a standby token from a naked clone unit that is completely an LOS cover from the back, who is sharing to a unit with Overwatch that's range one in front of it, to be able to shoot at anybody on the board. But we can
we don't talk about that, Evan.
I talk about it all the time.
Get out of here, Kyle.
I wasn't playing clones yet. I was still on the receiving end of that nonsense. So, yep.
Good times.
I remember the first time I played clones in that meta. It was for a practice game, Mike, for Invader League.
Yep, you were pretending to be Kingsley, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I played his list, which was very similar to your list at the time, and it basically in a mirror to give you practice. And I was like, what have I been doing this whole time if not this? Like, so yeah, it felt like getting off a moped and into a Ferrari. I bet you could soundboard that too. I'm sure I've said that before.
Mostly about that specific scenario.
About that specific interaction.
Yeah. And Republic has never been bad since.
Debatable. It's definitely been average since. There was a time period kind of like between the second round of clone nerfs and the CRB where they were just kind of meh.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that was when Kyle and I both took it to Adepticon. and we made what did we like we made day two but or whatever it was but there weren't any clones in the top eight or even like
right. You guys were on like the situational awareness spam list, right?
It was you could still at the time you could still exemplar share with you could still share standbys with exemplar, just not normal right. clone sharing.
Sure. So it's Anakin Padme.
Padme with a bunch of clones, but that was kind of before they got, because they got points reductions alongside the CRB changes, you know, and if they were getting points reductions, there was recognition that they were not great for a period of time. So
I was actually playing Anakin Padme Wookiees when they had the old version of scale and they could still like move across the battlefield faster than other people. Another RIP right there.
Yep.
I'm okay with the new climate rules. New climate rules are great.
Yeah, we could do a whole in memoriam section for like old keywords and stuff.
Marketing and Mike.
Yeah.
We could do a whole thing, dash Kyle.
Hey, I said we could do a whole section. That
yeah, it's a slightly different cast.
Segment. We could do a whole segment.
The funny thing is, he didn't even realize what he said.
I know. I didn't. Yeah. I mean, people could play, you could play like a drinking game every time Kyle says something like that. You take
I feel like you say it like once per episode. Like, I feel like generally count on you to say that at least once, because we're like going on about something and that's your way to kind of like wrap the conversation. You're like, no. I'm turning the bus around. We're going home.
Yeah. Speaking of, I think we should probably do that with this episode pretty soon. Do we have any more in memoriam discussion, or is are we done with the sad piano music?
I hopefully we've been done for a while. that would be kind of funny if we had to loop it like four times to
get through. I could put it on a loop. That's not a big deal.
It's probably not great for podcasting.
I think I'm probably going to put it on a loop now.
Yeah, there you go. It did occur to me that I was remiss in one thing in my own personal announcement earlier, and that is kind of leaving out the Kyle replacement plan. I mean, you alluded to this, Evan, I think in your Patreon post already, and obviously Brian was on last week, but there's going to be kind of a rotating guest. So it's not going to be just you two guys all the time.
Yeah, for those who are worried about it, is that, like bringing Brian on was sort of a taste of what I'm hoping to do in the future, to where we can get some just like a variety of opinions who can come from a variety of different places and sort of like shed light on the parts of Legion that that maybe me and Mike might be missing out on. So yeah, just gonna, we're sort of gathering the forces now and setting out a schedule. So more to come on that soon, but obviously next week it'll be the Kyle Cryathon. So
I hope not.
Well, yeah, not for you, but like we'll do some reminiscing and hopefully we'll do some bad take gathering between now and then. So we're counting on all of you to just expose Kyle as much as humanly possible. He won't be able to even like reply back to any of you because like work will probably already be keeping him busy by the time he would have a chance to. So now's your chance to just like take unanswered shots at Orc Meat.
Yeah, out of context stuff too, if it's funny. I'm all for it.
Yeah, so we don't care about accuracy in this show. We just want to be entertaining.
Yep, that's right. All right. Well, for the second to last time, we are the Notorious Scoundrels. I'm Kyle.
I'm Mike.
I'm Evan.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.